Welcome to My Song, Your Song, Our Song, Episode 3. I'm Holden Slathery, here with a guy wearing a Dearth t-shirt. That's my co-host, Mike Warsh, who has a vast collection of t-shirts of different metal bands. And in this podcast, we explore our musical tastes and where they converge and where they diverge. In each episode, we talk about one song that's my song, one that's Mike's song, and one that's our song, one that we both already know and love. We've got a really interesting show for you today, quite a lot of variety here. Today, my song is The Nothing by Mr. Liff. Mike?
My song is Night's Blood by Dissection.
And our song is California Dreamin' by the Mamas and the Papas. And so we'll start with The Nothing by Mr. Liff. So this is a little bit on the obscure side, and most of what I listen to is not very obscure, but I just had to pull this song out as I get ready to talk more about my love of rap and hip hop on this podcast. So Mr. Liff is a rapper who I definitely call underground. Are you familiar with him, Mike?
I've heard the name, but I've never actually listened to him until I was prepping for this cast.
Okay. Yeah, so his real name is Jeffrey Michael Haynes. He actually adopted the stage name Mr. Liff after taking shrooms at a Fish concert when he was a student at Colgate University. And he said in an interview one time, I don't know any Fish songs. I went to the show and I still don't know anything about them now. but apparently the shrooms and the experience of it, you know, inspired him, at least with his rap name. And he's a rapper I got into within the first couple of years of really listening to rap a lot, you know, early on in high school. And it was through a friend. It was music we were downloading on the programs at the time, like Kazaa and Aries. I downloaded most of his songs. And he teamed up with several other underground rappers. Some of them were from Boston. They were part of a label called Def Jux that was Boston based. And I went to see him perform live with Aesop Rock at the First Unitarian Church in Philly. You ever been there, Mike, for a concert?
I haven't actually, but I do love Aesop Rock. That sounds like a cool show.
Yeah, it was a great show. Aesop Rock, you know, obviously he's a much more well-known underground rapper who I never really got into. His style is a little weird and offbeat. I definitely want to, you know, give it some more shots. Like I respect it. You know, I would definitely like respect his talent, but I just have never gotten too deep into him. But, you know, him and Mr. Liff, they did their own songs, but they were also like going back and forth a lot, sharing the stage. My thoughts on Mr. Liff, you know, just something about his music, mainly his lyrical ability, really appealed to me and probably made me a bigger rap fan as I was, you know, getting into rap more. And I think like a lot of underground rappers, he has some really nerdy stuff, you know, where he talks a little bit about outer space, you know, some concept songs and concept albums where he's like creating a world that I'm not always all in on that. And then there's a lot of content about social issues, economics and race. And he has some stuff like that that's really good, but it just doesn't always hit that hard for me, although it's like, you know, smart and meaningful. But I am all in on his kind of just like rapping on a simple beat that's heavy enough to get into a very straightforward like this song. And Mr. Liff has a few songs like this. And for me, a rap song really doesn't need a chorus. Like some of my favorite rappers have like a couple songs without a real chorus, and it's usually one of my favorites. And this song, The Nothing, is not on any Mr. Liff album that I know of. So he had a couple EPs and then a few LPs, and this did, you know, wasn't on any of those. And my best guess is, you know, they were more conceptual and thematic albums, and this is just kind of a classic battle rap song about being a great rapper with a simple beat that just probably didn't fit onto any of his albums. Just a battle song, you know, not dissing someone in particular, but just really braggadocious, talking about how he can beat anyone in the battle. And so it starts out with these notes that sound like a horn, then with a ton of record scratching. So yeah, it's just definitely a tribute to old school rap, like in the 80s style. And then, you know, right away, he's talking about like a lot of these MCs tend to freeze when someone mentions kicking freeze, and saying like, you know, said they're kicking a freestyle, but they must be senile, forgot that they wrote that shit last night. So this whole concept is pretty interesting to me of, you know, the rap battle and the freestyle and how there's just this spectrum. I think on one side, it's like pure freestyling all off the top of your head. And then you have, you know, on the other end, you know, like rappers going on morning shows. Like, did you ever see Drake back in the day when he like went on a show and he had his cell phone and was like looking down on his cell phone trying to get at the right part of the song that he was rapping?
I actually didn't. I don't follow Drake. I respect him as an artist, but yeah, I don't really listen to him.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty embarrassing, but Drake has been very Teflon. Like, I think he's done a lot of things that, like, in the earlier eras of rap probably would have really discredited him, you know, such as like going on and like, you know, bringing your phone when you're supposed to kind of be at least like looking like you're doing a freestyle. But yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. It was very different back in the day.
Yeah. But yeah, ironically, the Nothing doesn't sound like a freestyle at all to me. To me, it's very meticulous and perfectionistic. It's full of middle rhymes and, you know, long syllabic rhymes. And it just sounds like there's a perfect amount of syllables per line, almost like it's a specialized poem, like a sonnet or something. You know, he's got, you know, this jam probably shocks blocks and throws DJs into beat craze. I love that, how he's saying like, you know, DJs will hear this and be inspired to go to the studio and make a bunch of new tracks. You know, I think, there's some lines like, you know, any MC on my shit list gets ripped with the quickness. All those in favor say, I like witness. I'm about to get physical like fitness, you paper like litmus. And then I, you know, it stands out to me. He says, you know, not eyewitness, but I like witness. And to me, that's just because it's like the perfect amount of syllables. And it's also funny to say, I like witness, just like this religious phrase and throwing in a filler word. So yeah, I'll play one part that I really like in this song.
Your throat, quote for quote, note for note, there's no hope. Now carry that back to your crew and ask them what they wanna do. Probably nothing. If they said they wanna see me, they probably bluffing. Probably only tough in the bathroom mirror, rhyming over R&B tracks. But
yeah, so I really like the way his words flow together there. You know, if they wanna see me, they're probably bluffing, probably only tough in the bathroom mirror, rhyming over R&B tracks. So then at the end of the song, he kind of throws in a little bit of underground rap nerdiness when he says, and if I can't be there myself, I'll create a genetic replica to step to you. So I don't expect everyone, you know, to love this song or to really get a strong positive reaction if I play it. But I think for someone who really appreciates rap lyrics, there's a lot to appreciate in this song. What were your thoughts on this, Mike?
This was another pleasant surprise. I think we both share the same taste in rap and hip hop, but we have different knowledge bases and they're not that different. But most of our rap, you know, that's mm-hmm. why we typically pick like a rap hip hop song to share and speak about why we love it. Mm-hmm. But this one I'd never heard before. But it's, I think it's awesome. I really like the beginning. It's old school, starting with a bunch of scratches, you know, kind of like a Primo beat. Primo always does, you know, scratching or like Static Selecta. Mm-hmm. The beat's great. We were discussing a little bit if this is considered boom bap or not. Hearing it again a second time, I guess you can, but it's not like the first description I would think of when I was speaking about it. You know, I guess a lot of people like associate boom bap with old school, but I think I would just call this kind of old school, but, you know, obviously very ahead of its time.
Actually, yeah. I mean, I would say this is more of a throwback because, well, so this is probably created late 90s or early 2000s.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow, I thought this was early 90s. Okay. Yeah.
No, no. So, yeah, that's why I say it's definitely more of a throwback style type of song. But I would argue like it takes, you know, that style, but more advanced. You know, if you listen, I mean, by early 90s, yeah, rappers were already doing these kinds of things with like multi-syllables and middle rhymes and stuff. Not so much in the 80s. So, like, yeah, it kind of takes the, you know, building knowledge, building ability over time, like to take some of the, you know, what rappers knew how to do later on, but like back in more of an old school style.
Yeah. And that's that. And it's interesting how he would open for Aesop Rock. Cause like you were saying, Aesop Rock's kind of like out there. It's a little, he's a little offbeat. He does all of his own productions. So it like, it follows his weird flow. This seems a little more like a little more straightforward. And I arguably, I kind of like the style a little more than Aesop Rock. I do like Aesop Rock a lot, but he's a little hard to get into, at least for me.
This is more accessible, I would say, but I picked like, to me, one of the most accessible Mr. Lift songs. I mean, there's all kinds of other songs you'll hear with all kinds of different sounds and different, just less traditional sounding things.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay. How was the show?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I don't remember if that was like my first rap concert. It might have been. Yeah, that might have been. Around that time, then I saw Jurassic 5 and I saw The Roots, kind of all in high school. All amazing shows. But yeah, it was. I mean, it's such a cool venue too. It's a church in Philly that hosts a lot of concerts, and like you could tell there were like some people who were really into it, like big fans, probably more Aesop Rock fans. But yeah, had a great time.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. One of my best friends in high school was a huge Aesop Rock fan. And it's an acquired taste. I feel like you were saying, oh, Mr. Lift is a little bit more accessible. It's not, you don't have to acquire it as much. It's pretty, pretty in your face and you get it. You know, you either like it or you don't. I loved it. Yeah.
All right. Glad to hear. Well, do you want to get into Night's Blood?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is one of my favorite songs of all time by one of my favorite bands of all time. There's a little bit of an argument of what subgenre of metal it is. A lot of people say blackened death metal. But to be nitpicky, I would say death and black metal. And I think the difference between the two is death metal is typically like it's, I don't want to say visceral, but it's a little chunky, it's a little broken up. It's a little bit easier to process in the short term, and black metal is more about telling a tale. So it's more like reading a book, and you have to pay attention to the notes over time rather than the immediate delivery that death metal brings. And this is I'll share a couple clips in this, but this band, this is a black metal band first and foremost. The guy was a huge fucking asshole. He got arrested and he served 21 years for killing a gay dude, I think, because the guy came onto him in a park. And then he wrote his final album in jail. And then as soon as he left jail, he was absolutely insane too. He like stabbed himself twice and then shot himself in the head in the middle of like a pentagram, completely sacrificing himself to Satan. Wow. So ultimately living up to the black metal tropes. Yeah, he no doubt he was an asshole person, but I think he's a musical genius, and one of the reasons why I really, really like this album and why I really like this song, is because for the first two records, he had somebody that was highly classically trained. And a lot of people compare metal to like classical music. I don't think it is. I think there are a couple subgenres that are like that, like power metal or epic metal, or maybe even technical death metal. I typically don't listen to that. I don't I like some classical, but I don't like the classical style of metal. But what's really unique about this band is they had a lot of classical influence in their songwriting. So it's still very visceral. It's very creative, but you get this like classical element behind it. And let me just play a couple clips to show you what I'm speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so speaking about how this is classical, I want to play what I've been referring to. They have these overarching high notes above this background of tremolo picking, is what it's called. It's like a picking with a specific cadence to it. So I'm just going to play a couple seconds that shows the shift from something that's a little more death metal sounding to something that's black metal sounding.
Mm-hmm.
So you noticed a really chunky interlude, something that's a little more rhythmic, and then it hits the high notes that kind of tells the tale. Da-na-na-na.
Yeah.
So I think that's I really like the song because I think it's a good comparison of death metal to black metal, which is hard to discern if you don't listen to it a bunch. And I'm just going to play two more clips, about 10 seconds each. The reason why I played that is because there's a lot of transitions in this song. That specifically has a very old kind of medieval feel to it. And it speaks to something that this band kind of introduced to black metal, which was like this this medieval feel that a lot of bands play today, but at the time it was brand new to the genre.
Mm-hmm.
And my last clip. And that's really just to reinforce how black metal kind of tells a tale. You can feel the emotion, you can feel sadness and anger through those notes, but it's not something you're supposed to absorb immediately. You're supposed to absorb it over time with the song and go through a slower rise of emotion than you would with death metal. But yeah, it's one of my favorite songs by one of my favorite bands of all time.
All right. I like some of the melodies, those last couple clips you played, the guitar where it's, or the plucking guitar, I like that a lot. And some of the faster parts too. For me, the hardest part to get into is the singing, the kind of satanic, I would say, singing. It kind of reminds me of a monster in a fantasy movie. And it's hard to understand the lyrics, and that kind of takes me out of it, where I think I'm more into it when it's just instrumentals. So what does this kind of singing evoke for you?
That's a common, when I introduce friends to metal, that's always the first thing that's mentioned. Hey, I like the instrumentals, but the singing is just hard to get into. This is a very, metal in general, I think, is a very emotional genre, and this this particular vocalist is a very his lyrics are very fantastical. It's essentially about like giving your soul to Satan, and he's kind of scream his style of vocals are kind of like screaming into the abyss. And it's definitely something you learn to appreciate over time, unless you're like a really angry or sad person, which you could argue I am both a little bit. But I think I also grew up appreciating metal because I started listening to metal pretty early, like Korn and, you know, Metallica and Slipknot. So the vocals aren't as, they don't stand out as much to me. I can put them into the background and appreciate the instruments while they're happening, and then sometimes tap into them. I do like his voice a lot. I like his lyrics a lot. But the thing that really stands out about this band, I think, are the instrumentals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I think for me, it's, you know, the things about the singing is one, that I want to understand more of what he's saying. And two, like for me, just as someone listening to, you know, black metal, death metal for the first time, you know, I don't know what, like, it doesn't sound authentic to me because I'm looking for genuine, I'm looking for the kind of emotion in someone's voice that I can hear, you know, in a, like the voice of someone that I may hear in real life or in a movie or something, that's not like fantasy, you know, so it's hard for me to gather the emotion, because to me it's so fantastical.
Yeah, it's I think it's more, the music is more escapist than I think the you know, the standard genre. I think like hard rap, that, you know, that I've, you know, Mobb Deep is one of my favorite groups of all time. I think that's also a little bit escapist too, because there's a lot of anger behind it, there's a lot of emotion, but I've personally never been in the position of like shooting somebody, for example. Mm-hmm. And this is very similar in that you're placing yourself into this world that they're creating, and you're just tapping into your most intense emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hard to do if you're, you know, if you're just not into it, you know.
Yeah. All right, well, but I appreciate you sharing that song with me. And now we're going to get into a very familiar song. I'll play the beginning of it. All right, so that is California Dreamin' by the Mamas and the Papas, the intro. And, you know, the Mamas and the Papas were a folk rock group formed here in Los Angeles, where Mike and I both live. This is their most famous song, and just a really famous song. I would say, is this the most well-known song we've done yet on this podcast? Would that be Hey Ya by Outkast?
I think California Dreamin'.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Probably. It's a beautiful song. It's a lot about harmony. You know, you have two men, two women all singing, you know, with their voices harmonizing. Mike, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you with this song?
Well, the song has a lot of nostalgia for me. I think this is my first favorite song of all time. I must have heard it, you know, my first real memory, I think, is my fourth birthday, and I think I fell in love with the song when I was like five.
Wow.
And I would have to say family memories, you know. It's just it's very nostalgic for me.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know when I knew this song, but I think for a long time I thought it was by the Beach Boys.
It could be. I mean,
yeah. California, well, in my opinion, I like this better than any Beach Boys song. But that's just me.
Me too. Yeah, I do love the Beach Boys, though.
I wouldn't say I love them, but I like some of their stuff. Yeah. So the lyrics, I mean, being on the East Coast, you know, maybe the Northeast in winter, and thinking about being back in Los Angeles, you know, all the leaves are brown, all the and the sky is gray. I've been for a walk on a winter's day. I'd be safe and warm if I was in LA. And then he talks about going into a church and how the preacher likes the cold because he knows people will stay, which is really funny because also he says he pretends to pray. And I don't think I realized he was saying pretending. So he's really just in this church to get out of the cold.
That's cool. I never thought about that before until you just called it out. That's mm-hmm.
And then at the end, he says, if I didn't tell her, I could leave today. And this is kind of mysterious. Like, what is it that he, you know, did tell her? You know, is it something where if he didn't tell her this thing that he told her, then he could go back to California? Now, I looked this up and somebody wrote that this, you know, may have been a reference to a separation between Michelle and John Phillips, where Michelle had an affair with another band member, Danny Doherty. So that sounds really messy. Anyway, but it sounds to me kind of like a tragedy. Like, this guy loves California and he wants to be back there, but there's this small piece of communication, something with this woman that's keeping him from going back. And yeah, maybe, you know, he told her that he cheated on her, and that's like the, you know, maybe if he didn't tell her, then he could go back. I don't know. I'm just wondering. It's kind of left open ended and kind of just thrown in at the end as kind of a little nugget to wonder about. Any more, you know, thoughts on the lyrics, Mike?
On the lyrics specifically, I always kind of compare this to their song, Monday, Monday. They like to sing about easy living. The harmony of their voices is perfect for that. You know, if you look at them, they look like pure hippies, you know? But yeah, this does bring back a lot of, like, picturing myself, you know, actually hearing this in Philadelphia for the first time and looking outside and trying to imagine what California looked like. This is another fantasy song for me. Every time I hear it, I just get lost in memory and I get lost in the picture they're painting.
Mm-hmm.
I love lyrics to this song.
Totally. There's a lot of vivid imagery. Hey, and this is a little off track, but did you ever hear the show California Dreams?
No. What's that?
It was a Saturday morning 90s show that I watched a bunch. And they have a song called California Dreams. That's their signature song. It's not nearly as good as this song, but it's got like guys and girls singing together. And it's definitely a nod to this song. And also maybe like the Beach Boys and just other Southern California stereotypes. It's like lyrics start out surf dudes with attitudes, kind of groovy, laid back moods, sky above, sand below, good vibrations, feeling mellow.
Oh yeah, that's totally a Beach Boys nod.
But it was like kind of the rock band knockoff of Saved by the Bell. So Saved by the Bell really took off. And then I don't know if you watch Saturday morning shows at the time, there was just all these different attempts to replicate Saved by the Bell. So there was this California Dreams, like Saved by the Bell. But what if they were all in a band? There was Hang Time. Like, what if it's Saved by the Bell, but they all play on the high school basketball team together? Remember that one?
I do remember that one. Yeah. I don't remember California Dreams though. Yeah.
Okay. Listen to the song. It's pretty funny. You know, the guy who wrote it was actually a musician, and the characters in the show, or the actors in the show, actually sang it. Or I think they sang the songs, but they're pretty corny, but it's funny. Jimmy Fallon brought the actors on one time because he's really into that kind of nostalgia. It's on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we should probably wrap up. You know, this isn't a 90s TV show podcast. But
I do want to say before we do, I want to say one last thing that I love about the Mamas and the Papas. Everybody speaks to Mama Cass's talent. She's absolutely incredible. But I really, you had mentioned the harmonies in the beginning between the men and the women. And I really, really appreciate that with this band. If you listen to, you know, ABBA has the same setup, two men, two women, but it's mostly women singing, and you don't get the harmony of the male vocals in the background. And even between the two women of Mamas and the Papas, you get different harmonies. So I really, really, really like that about this band.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to call that out before we, you know, before we sign with them.
Yeah, totally. The voices are beautiful here. So yeah, this was quite a good pod today. Mr. Liff, dissection, you know, me listening to death, black metal / death metal for the first time in California Dreamin'. So thanks, Mike. And thanks, listeners. And we'll see you next time on My Song, Your Song, Our Song.
Thank you.